Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Room 42. I'm Liz Fraley from Single Sourcing Solutions. I'm your moderator. This is Janice Summers, our interviewer, and welcome to Tracy Nathans-Kelly, today's guest in Room 42. Dr. Nathans-Kelly is currently an Associate Director of the Engineering Communications Program at Cornell University in the College of Engineering. She's taught technical, business, engineering, and scientific communication courses since 1989. She co-authored IEEE's English for Technical Professionals online course. She serves on the IEEE Educational Activities Board, the IEEE Continuing Education Committee, and the Editorial Board for IEEE's Teaching Excellence Hub. Based on her extensive work in the field of presentation design, she co-authored the book, Slide Rules, Design, Build, and Archive Presentations in the Engineering and Technical Fields with Christine Nicometto, and her most recent online certificate course for practicing professionals is Technical Presentations offered through eCornell and starting very soon. And today, Tracy is here to help us start answering the question, what can we do to create better technical presentations for speakers, audiences, and users alike? Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's so fun to be here with you two and everybody else.
We're so excited. And this is such a great topic. Having attended a lot of conferences and presentations, I think everyone should be forced to take your online course. I really do. But before we get into too much, I always like to hear what inspired you to write this book. And this book is available on Amazon, right?
It's available on Amazon and everywhere else that we usually look for books. It's paperback. Yes. And it comes, I think, in every e-format available. Yes. That's what we've been told, at least. Unfortunately, it has not been translated into any other languages, although there's been requests for Spanish. But Christine Nicometto and I started to author this book around 2011. Uh-huh. And at that point, we were both teaching at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And we were teaching required courses for undergraduates. So that was our first pain point right there. And not because the students were doing anything wrong, but it was because they were doing everything they had seen done.
Right.
So what happens is they're asked to do a presentation and they open up PowerPoint slides because, you know, engineering, we like to use visuals. It's really important. And right. So they would open up PowerPoint and there would be that slide template. Click to enter title, click to add, you know, and there's your bullets.
Right.
Yeah. Engineers are extraordinarily good at following instructions. So they did that. Well, the problem is, of course, that slide template was built off of the idea of an index card. And the early history of PowerPoint is that it was made to be an organization. It was meant to be electronic index cards.
Uh-huh.
Pretty wild. So our students would follow instructions and they would click to add a title and then they would add their content in bullets.
Don't you think too that they were like seeing a lot of presentation and we'd like to repeat what we've seen others do too, right? It's kind of like follow me and I'll, you know, I just do that, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So they would see their professors do this and they'd go up an internship and they would see the same thing, right? So it was pervasive. Mm-hmm. We saw it as undergraduates at that time. And then as the instructors of these courses, we would have to see over the course of an academic year, up to 500 presentations, and everybody was reading the bullets, right? So we were going brain dead and they were going brain. It was not good, right? It was terrible. And we were just like, nothing good is happening here, right? Like they're not enthusiastic and we're not enthusiastic. And then when Christine and I started to teach in a master's course. So these were practicing professionals.
Uh-huh.
For these master's courses, you had to be at least 5 years into your degree.
Mm-hmm.
So these were necessarily online courses, of course, because everybody's still at their jobs, but literally from around the world and every technical, engineering, and scientific field. So we had everybody from, we had Avon, Cranberry, what's the cranberry? Ocean Spray. Mm-hmm. To Google and Sirius and John Deere and the Department of Defense and everything in between. Mm-hmm. They were doing the same thing. We're like, this has got to change. So we looked at Michael Alley's work, where he talks about the assertion evidence model. Mm-hmm. And we had to tinker with that a little bit to meet the needs of the practicing professionals. And so that's the bulk of the slide rules book. And Michael Alley was happy to help us and have him. He likes to focus on the undergraduate experience. And right. we really like to focus on the practicing professional experience. So right. our solution was born out of dying.
Yeah, it's like born out of selfish necessity. I can't sit through 500 of these long yeah. bullet.
Yeah. And you know, there were other things out there. Mm-hmm. You know, Zen and the Art of Presenting, and you know, all of these other books, and you know, of course, now I'm gonna forget the name of it anyway, Nancy's books and all this, mm-hmm. where that there was more of a focus on the needs for like marketing and PR. Yeah.
I was just going to say, like, there's, I mean, in marketing and business, there's tons of things, but I don't know that I've seen anything focused for the engineer, for the STEM person.
Exactly. And so there's a lot of nice influence there from Presentations In and Slideology and all of those books. They're great. And we definitely drew upon the wisdom of those.
Right.
But again, it was missing the mark for our engineers. Right. We tried those for a year or two with our practicing professionals. It wasn't quite so we listened to their responses to using those techniques. And then we refined, honed, and this was the core of our book called Slide Rules.
Right. And I think that's one of the nice things about your book. I mean, it's based on real practiced research, like trial and error and feedback, like that loop to perfect how to do a better presentation. And I think that's what the examples are in the book too, are based on all of that, because your book has examples on how to do. Yeah,
we were very lucky to get full color, so that was a really, that doesn't happen a lot anymore. And all of the examples in there, except maybe two or three, uh-huh. are scrubbed, but definitely taken from actual presentations that our practicing engineers did. So again, scrubbed for proprietary reasons, right? We make it a little bit more generic here and there where we needed to, but those are real. Those are all real examples, both the bad and the good.
Right, so. Right. And the reasons why one's good versus the other,
yes.
right?
We like to do a lot of before and afters.
I always like to hear, like, you know, the things that were on the cutting room floor, or the, you know, the behind the scenes stuff. Like, what were some of the things that really surprised you in going through this and writing this book and doing the experiments with these practitioners that are also students?
Because they're practicing engineers,
mm-hmm.
and they were good. You know, they were really amazing. And all of the ones that we drew our examples from were in this master's program. So they were there, they were spending a good amount of money to be there. And they were so excited, but they were also scared to try any of these new techniques, which is really interesting to me, because engineers and technical professionals and scientists, they're problem solvers.
They're experimenters.
They like to experiment, exactly. But I think the thing that we uncovered that we really had to think carefully about is that a lot of damage has been done to STEM people since probably junior high. Oh, you're good at science and tech. You go over here. You don't need to worry about this stuff. You don't need to be in speech class, debate, theater, choir. You're over here.
Right. They drew a hard line between humanities and technology and engineering. Yeah.
And they still do. However, a lot of the students themselves, I'm recalling my undergraduates in particular, are very artistic. love words and sounds and experimenting, but they tend to silo it, okay? And they don't pull that expertise into their work life. Mm-hmm. So interesting side note, University of Wisconsin has one of the best marching bands in the nation. Go watch them on YouTube. They're amazing, right? Mm-hmm. A step above, and that's kind of a pun because they do the high stepping. It's very, very demanding. The marching band puts in more practice hours during football season than the football players do. They are amazing. And
I love a good marching band.
Love a good marching band.
I'm going to have to look it up.
You're going to have to do it. You're going to take my word for it because it's true. A lot of people go to the football games just to watch the marching
band. Just to watch the marching band. Yeah.
they're awesome. Not to put down the football players, but I'm all about the marching band.
Yeah,
but
right?
For many years, the largest contingency of majors in marching band was engineering.
Precision.
Yes.
Precision and practice.
And practice and doing it and being proud, but also having that really important outlet. So what this means, what we found along the way is that damage had been done to these students, even the practicing professionals. I'm not good at this. I don't know how to do this. This doesn't make any sense to me. And then there's also the emotional bit where people are very attached to their communication efforts because they feel like it comes from the heart. That might be true for fiction or memoir writing or something like this, but we really have to kind of work to separate, like, you know, talking about solid rocket fuel regression rates should not be emotional. You should be invested, right? And care, but so helping them pull apart emotion from investment in a topic and their performance was really a big piece that we still, every day you have to work, every new person you meet, you have to work with them on that.
So separating the passion from the facts?
Not necessarily. So, you know, like when people write a story and, you know, junior high and high school, it's stories about, oh, it's fiction, or it's a story about your grandparents or your best vacation or something. And that does come from your heart, right? And yes, you're passionate about it, but it comes from personal experience and all this. Doing work communication, you still have to have passion, excitement, or I like to call it investment, but it's not your life, or I hope it's not.
Oh, I see.
You're not putting
your life. Right.
So you're still invested in it. You still have interest in it. And there's what I would refer to as passion, but it's not impassioned. It's not like a personal.
Exactly.
A personal thing. It's just, this is, you know, really great technology. And this is why this is important. I can convey that through some emotion, but not really.
Excitement or, you know, investment or keying into an idea, that's not the same as talking about your relationship with your grandparents or something, right?
Right.
And that has not ever been pulled apart. Mm-hmm. And so when they go to communicate, they just want to follow the rules because it's really intimidating. Mm-hmm. And that was a big, and still is every day, a big part of it. Like, helping people understand that you can be invested and excited, but this is not your soul, right? And so pulling that apart is a continuous, wonderful thing to help people do. But when they use the techniques that we do in slide rolls, what happens is the drudgery disappears. Mm-hmm. So one of our past students called those bulleted slides the decks of drudgery. And I'll never forget, it's so awesome, right? He's like, I feel like I'm a whole new person that I can talk to my expertise.
Yes.
So it's really an amazing thing to see kind of that shift.
Yes. So. Yeah, because I think over-reliance on too long of bullets, you're requiring people to read. And then sometimes people read those bullets when they're presenting.
Oh, always. So if you have a big glowing screen or even one like this, right? So if we're in Zoom and I would share my screen, whoop, all of a sudden the people get small.
You'd be tiny, yeah.
And see, that's weird.
It is.
because we pay to be in rooms with the experts. We don't pay to be in rooms with the slides.
Mm-hmm. It's funny that you mentioned it, because I noticed, like, when I'm watching presentations online, they've got slides. I might glance at them, but if they've got their face, that's what I'm looking at. And if their face is not there, I'll go read something else.
Right. Well, and that's one of the lessons. That's one of the lessons VMware learned decades ago, that mm-hmm. people were more inclined to follow the video and follow the instructions if there was also a human face in front, kind of like not tiny and small and in the corner, but like there on screen, because right. we respond to faces and people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And wow. so it's really an important thing to recast that whole experience. Mm-hmm. And so whether we're in an online atmosphere like this or we're in a room, the idea is we want to use slides like Jumbotrons, right? They're the background. They should yeah. not be the thing itself.
Right.
The expert talking should be the thing itself.
Right.
And then we can point to something and say, look right here, you know.
For a special emphasis.
Right. And if we have slides that have a whole bunch of bullets, one of two things is going to happen. Like you were saying, Janice, you either shut down because mm-hmm. it's information overload, or we don't listen to the speaker and we just read. Because whether you're online or whether you're in a room, a big glowy thing is quite compelling. Our little reptile brains take over.
That's how we're taught and conditioned. Yeah. Television is on, you're going to look at it. If my computer screen's on and my boyfriend walks in the room, he'll look at my computer screen, not at me. I'm like, I'm right here.
Yeah. And so the glowy thing, and then if there's a whole bunch of bullets there, then they're going to concentrate. And they're concentrating super hard on those bullets because they are also ignoring the speaker. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it becomes a different technique that is the one that Christine and I promote and Michael Alley, where the idea is to have a sentence header, a very short sentence. And we always say mm-hmm. no more than two lines, a complete thought, subject, verb, object, period, a complete encapsulated thought, one idea per slide, and then use the other acreage in the slide for a visual.
Hmm.
That way, this idea that a lot of people have of storytelling starts to make more sense. So if you read all of the sentence headers, right, that should cascade the story of the technology or the science or the experiment. And then you have all that lovely slide acreage for visual. And sometimes no visual is needed, right? It can just be the idea itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then when people start to panic, they're like, no, I need my bullets. They need to have everything. We get that a lot. They need to have all this stuff. We're just like, cut and paste and put it into the notes pane. That way you can share your slides and it's embedded. It never gets lost. It's still with the file. So I'm looking at one of these questions about using.
Don't look at the questions. It's okay.
Okay.
One of the things is, what if there's not a chance, like it's, you can only show slides and there's no chance for your face to be on there anywhere and you can only do slides. Do the rules change on the presentation?
I would say practice really in that moment, voice modulation, because then the enthusiasm or the moments to pay special attention to highlight will have to be done with your narration voice. And a lot of folks are not very comfortable with voice modulation and really emphasizing out loud. And so a little bit of practice will help you accomplish that.
And pausing.
One of my colleagues, her name is Annette. She is the queen of the strategic pause.
Right.
She's amazing. I don't think anybody can do it as well as her, but she'll be talking, she'll be keynoting, right? And then she just stops. And sometimes she doesn't mean to, and sometimes it's planned, but who knows? And she's like, I'm having an idea. Hold on just a second. And she announces her pause.
Right.
And everybody's like,
What's the idea?
Right? It's right. Stunning. It's stunning. She does a great.
That's a great trick for a pregnated pause, right? A long pause. But if you do, like, what if you have like a lot of information that you do have to present on a screen? Is there a technique that you can use to have spaced pauses while you're giving them a chance to kind of digest the screen change?
If something like that happens, and this is even for bullets, because sometimes bullets are the answer, not very often, but sometimes right. they need a list.
Right.
Bring items in one by one.
Okay.
So you want to do a layer or a build.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the word is that you like the most. I like to think of it in terms, I was discussing this the other day with a math instructor. In the old days, when we would instruct, we would write it on the blackboard.
Yes.
And talk at the same time, right?
Yes.
That's a human pace.
Right.
His slides, he would bring up everything all at once. So here's the entire, you know, multi-step equation. And all of his students would just be like, no.
Right.
And then, like you said, Jess, you just shut down.
Right? Exactly. Because too much information overload.
It's too much. Somebody said this to me once and it kind of stuck with me. Like, that's hazing. Like if you can get through this, then you're worthy. Well, that's not cool.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And it's kind of like, yeah, because like I know for me personally, when I'm hit with a big, huge, fat slide with a lot of content on it, I'm like, well, look, speaker, pick one. Which one do you want me to pick? Do you want me to pay attention to you or do you want me to pay attention to the slide? I'm like, you just dumped this on me and I have to digest this and you at the same time. That's kind of not fair. To me, it's not.
So you want to pace it. Mm-hmm. So you bring in, maybe it's a really complicated chart. You bring in one swim lane first, okay. or you bring in everything that's coming next week first, whatever it is, right?
Right.
And then we talk about this and then we bring in the next thing. Right. And then now we're back to a human pace. We're back to equations on a blackboard, which is the pace at which our brains can learn. Even if we're brilliant, we're not instamatics. So.
Right. Because, you know, when you're trying to inform, you want them to retain the information. So
right.
you need to give them time right. to chew and digest right. the information. Right.
All of those things that we're talking about where the slide is really full of information and, you know, we want to get all that information to our people. We don't want to forget anything.
Right.
Right. There's all these really compelling reasons why people push back and say, no, I need everything on the slide. And it is never true. Okay. So there's different ways to handle it. Mm-hmm. So you cut and paste all of your personal notes and you put those in the notes frame.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That way, like I said before, it travels with the slide. So the slides that are being shown to your audience should be for your audience. They should not be your personal set of note cards. That's the real paradigm shift there. What can I do to make this event for them and not just a set of note cards for me? So you move all of your little notes to yourself and your whatever it is, right? That's making everything full of bullets and too much. You cut, paste, put those in the notes pane. And like I mentioned before, that will now travel with the slide file. So if somebody says, oh, I missed the meeting, which happens all the time, as we know, right? I missed the meeting. Can you just send me the slides? Okay, so what you do is you save it as a PDF and you save it with the notes pane showing.
Yep.
And that way the PDF that they get has the slide at the top. So if there's a graph or something, they can see that graph that you used during the talk.
And right.
all of your talking points will print with the notes down below
right.
on that
right.
page. And problem solved. There is no way that they can possibly miss both your slide that might have some graphics that they need and all of the talking points below.
Right.
And it makes it accessible. It makes it screen reader friendly. All of these things that we need to pay attention to.
And if it's one of those complicated slides where you had to do a build, However you do the builds, like sometimes you can't animate builds on certain presentation platforms. You have to actually do slide, slide, slide and build that way.
Yeah.
Then you can just take that final build slide and add copious notes on that one. So all of the notes that go with it on that one, right?
Well,
so that
that's exactly it, Janice. That's what we always coach people to do.
Yeah.
So for the live presentation, if you're using something like WebEx or something and it's a little unpredictable, instead of making animations or build, you separate it out across five slides or
whatever. Right, or however many slides.
Yeah, and then there's the grand finale, and that's where all those talking notes should be.
Right.
And then when you make the PDF for somebody else, you just cut out all the interim slides.
Right, you just rip those slides out. Yeah, so you can have a PDF ready to send because a lot of people want to see the notes. And it's nice to have those notes prepared for them so that it triggers them too to remember when you were talking.
Right? Exactly.
They're seeing that, they see the slide and then they see these bullet points that, you know, when you talk, you're a little extemporaneous, I hope, and not just reading the bullets. You're not showing them.
Another advantage of no bullets.
Right.
You become authentic again. Your authentic knowledge starts to shine again.
Yeah, look, can we talk about that?
So not being beholden to your bullets and not being the person who reads those bullets.
Right.
Allows you to be in the moment.
Yes.
It allows your expertise to shine. If you are reading bullets, you don't look like you own the information. You look like you're reading the information.
Right.
You got to own it. This is all yours. If you're in front of people, this has to be you.
Yeah.
And there's another advantage in that if you are interrupted, it doesn't freak you out.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Because like we're doing today, it's kind of a conversation. So if you're nervous about not being able to see your notes pane, or you're nervous about not being fully scripted, practice a couple times more, but don't memorize, because then again, you're going to get frozen. You're going to get locked in.
Mm-hmm.
Practice a little bit more. You know, recently I just, I did a keynote for Eat Cornell. And whatever system they were using, I could not see my notes pane. I didn't really need it, but I kind of wanted to remember some stats and stuff just in case, you know.
Right.
Their system did not allow me to see both slides that I might want to use, and then also my notes pane. So I simply just printed them out. I actually had them on the desk in front of me. So just in case I needed that little.
We have a link for that too, but I want to make sure we share that with everybody. And just really quick, I just want to encourage everybody to watch that eCornell video presentation. It's fantastic. It's a wonderful presentation.
It was a lot of fun. And in the end, after discussing it with the host that I was doing there, we decided that we would not use any slides necessarily, but then I could call, it's kind of a fancy setup for them, right? I could call them and say, oh, can you put up example number 13? And then Nick in the background would throw it up on the screen for a few minutes.
Yeah.
And so it was really nice for me to know in advance I wouldn't be able to see my notes. And so I just took care of business in a different way,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I did not want my audience just to see a bunch of bullets.
Right.
That would not do.
That would be a bad thing. Yeah. Because I think, you know, too, when you talk about, you know that sentence, like I like that whole, the title is this sentence, a simple sentence that conveys the information, it encapsulates what those bullets are about, right?
Yeah.
So you might not be showing the bullets, maybe you're showing the visual and your bullets are the notes. But just knowing that what that sentence is, when you're rehearsing before you present, you should always rehearse. But that should be your trigger, right?
It is.
And then you'll get through the bullets in whatever order, and maybe you'll forget one. Like that I think is something that a lot of people fear, is that they'll forget one.
And you know what? If you forget one, and it's 3 minutes later during your talk, you're like, you know what? I forgot to say.
Yeah.
Your life is not going to fall apart.
Right.
And the people in the room will be like, oh, cool. They're going to go back. Right. It's not this devastating thing that everybody thinks that it is.
Right.
If somebody needs that information, they're like, wait a minute, I think you skipped the stat. great, talk about it. You know, again, being the authentic expert in the room isn't reading bullets and it's not reading your notes. It's being there and having like this sharing of expertise. Mm-hmm. They're there to learn from you and you should learn from them. Like if they're asking questions, there's a gap somewhere. Now, you know.
Yeah. Cause that's another really good point that you're bringing up. Cause when you're in a professional situation, oftentimes there's a lot more interaction rather than, you know, when you're presenting at conferences, it might be a little different. It might be that, you know, people are reserved and they're not going to ask you questions until the end, or they're not going to ask you questions until they see you in the hall. But mm-hmm. when you're professionally presenting, you're oftentimes in a conference room. And they're like right there with you. So they will interrupt and they will ask questions.
They will. And sometimes that conversation that happens because of those interruptions, and that might be the best thing that happens all day.
Exactly. And I think that's the thing that it's harder, I think, from an engineering perspective to let go of, I need to get through all of this material. Like I need to give all of this to you. Is it harder to let go of that in favor of the extemporaneous conversation, the discourse that happens that's spawned by, you know, a topic that you bring up? Like maybe it's one slide and there's the sentence and it gets everybody involved and you spend 20 minutes on that one point, but you've only got an hour to talk. So you can't get all the other points then.
But obviously the value that everybody in the room, if that discussion has happened, that's the value point.
Yeah.
And the rest, if you've done your work and you've got stuff in your notes pane, can be sent later, or you schedule a follow-up meeting, or in some cases, my master students say, yeah, we just worked through lunch because we were all in.
Right.
And that kind of excitement does not happen if you're reading bullets.
No.
Right. So there's something about having a distilled pointed idea at the top. And we really emphasize the point that should be a complete sentence. Mm-hmm. Cause you know, the prompt does click add a title. I wish that prompt would say click to add your idea or something else.
Mm.
Because clicking to add a title means you're going to put a fragment up there, introduction, results. Right. And in that moment, so if you just put results up there, you've got a bunch of data. What that does at a very deep level, nobody consciously thinks about this, but this is what is happening in the back of our brains, is that everybody's going, is this going to be good? Oh my God, what if it changes my workflow? And if it's bad, that means I'm going to have to retool everything in that moment. But if you say instead, the results were very promising. Everybody goes, let's hear it.
Yeah,
right? That's what happens inside your head in that moment. Or the results showed us that we have 3 things to work on. Okay, that's great. It's not 17 things to work on.
It sets the expectation too for the attendee. Yeah. So is that a big shift? Is teaching people to think not from the information you need to communicate out, but from the audience that's attending?
What do they need?
Right.
What do they need when they walk out of this room, whether it's a virtual room or real? What do they need when they go back to their desk? Do they need every single little teeny tiny detail? Nope, because they can email you and ask you for those data sheets.
Mm-hmm.
What do they need? Right. So that's usually a higher order distilled thing. Even if you're talking about, you know, new materials for your spark plug, whatever. I heard a great talk once from a Harley Davidson guy about a new spark plug thing. It was a great talk. He made it awesome. I still think about that talk. I'm like, stupid spark plugs. And he pulled it off because he was there. He was invested. It seemed really cool in the time. And it was perfect. And everybody went away going, we should do like the new spark plugs. That's what we should do. It was so obvious because he had paid attention to what the audience would want rather than proving that he had looked down every single technical avenue and sussed out all the information, they assumed that's what he did. That was his job.
Right.
They needed to know how his research affected them. And so that's that shift. Like, slides have to be for your audience and the takeaways have to be for their audience.
Well, in your presentation, it's for the audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. So always. Taking that, and you know, I mean, that's something that's inbred in everybody who's in technical communication as a professional field, right?
All your work is for someone else. Like Christine said, a presentation, it's a present.
Oh, I like that.
I know, right? She says it better than I do.
But it's fascinating how, because this ties back to what you were saying earlier too. It's how we kind of forget that that's where our expertise is and we fit into what we think we're supposed to do.
Right. And, you know, the people who created PowerPoint, they were creating an organizational tool. They had no training in training.
Yeah.
They had no training in working with people. They had no training in cognitive function. If you look at it, it is an index card. That's what they meant to create. And now they're fancy. And even Prezi is an index card. You can zoom in, zoom out, and you can do this, and this, and this, and this. It is an index card. And Prezi is not great for a lot of things. You know, it has its moments where it can be very useful. I like it for like a process. You know, the movement is easier than if you're designing it in slides. But it has all the same bad underpinnings that PowerPoint does. It just can kind of move around. And unless you know how to control that, you've taken a filmmaking class and you know how to control and manipulate pan and zoom, I would say don't do it. I get motion sick from a lot of Prezis because people don't know what the heck they're doing. So, and they're not ADA accessible. They don't plan to be. They openly state that.
Wow.
So, which I thought was weird. Like, why are you not? Hopefully that's changed. Maybe I haven't looked. I have to admit, I haven't looked in like 6 months. And maybe because of my thing about accessibility, which is too bad. It could be a useful tool to a lot of people, but that's just me.
So what are some of the key, I know I need to go look at all my slides and say, am I writing sentences? I had to do slides and I'm present on camera too at the same time.
Yeah.
But I don't like to put a lot of content on the slides because if I'm there talking to you, I want your attention and I want you engaged. And I do better with engaged audiences. I don't do good if I'm just talking to myself, right? I do better with engagement. And that's, you know, it's part of why you're going to show up live with me is for that engagement. Mm-hmm. I need to go back and look at my slides and say, am I writing sentences? Because I don't think I am.
We often don't. And there's a really interesting moment where people, they're still writing titles. They're just really long titles. They're not sentences yet.
Right.
We're like, no, okay, think about how you would say this out loud as a human being. Make it a complete sentence. So there is that kind of remembering your grammar moment, like subject, verb, object is what we usually like, and that's that, of course, that's the kind of sentence we usually write in technical communication anyway. We answer all kinds of questions in the book. We have tons of FAQs where we kind of get down into some nitty gritty. But it's kind of an interesting moment to when people understand how much that sentence header changes everything. It changes it for the audience, it changes it for you. I like to tell this story. So I had this student, she was something else, super smart, doing some really amazing work with plant imaging, imaging under the soil, and I don't know, using some new photography techniques, right? It was really stunning work. And she had to take my class And she was not happy with me. Yeah, we also have a story in our book about a guy who actually reported us, Christine and I, when we were teaching the graduate course to practicing professionals. He worked for a major automotive thing. He reported us because he was so mad that he had to do sentence headers and no bullets. But both of them, the story kind of ends the same. Christine and I, because these were these atmospheres where we're like, okay, well, you have to do what we say anyway, because we're the teachers. So sometimes we pull out the teacher card, even with the practicing professionals. And we said, you have to try it anyway. Okay, so this woman with the plant imaging, she was mad at me in my office, yelling at me. Like, not just steaming, right? Like, she was mad. She's like, you are so completely wrong. And I said, I don't care. Just do it my way. It's just a grade. Who cares? Just try it. So she gets to her big presentation and she's done the thing. Sentence header, high visuals. She had the best visuals around. She had plants and cool photography and roots and, you know, all this imaging. And she's giving her talk and she's about 2 minutes in. And it's like it washed over her. She felt the power of not being beholden to her bullets. Yeah. And I'm in the back of the room, right? Yeah. So she can't really see me. And all of a sudden she's moving. She's not like gripping the podium. And she's going over and she's pointing to the things in her slides, which she would not do in her practice session. It was a 180. It was stunning. And all of her expertise, just, it came out. Her voice was strong. She was standing up straight. She wasn't hiding behind the podium. It was stunning. This happens again and again and again. And so when she was done, she like packs up her stuff and the moment is over and she runs around to the back of the room and she just stood in front of me and she went, like, I know. Do you see this? Do you see this? And we give an example of this in the book. This executive at this car, you know, the one who filed a complaint against us. We're like, just do it anyway. It's just a grade. Who cares? Just do it. So then he reported back. We couldn't see the actual presentation because, again, proprietary concerns.
Right.
So he gave this talk at work with all these other practicing engineers. Sorry. Was one of his underlings. So this executive gave his report back. He said, actually, it went really well. And I'm completely surprised. And I'm apologizing to Tracy and Christine because this changed everything. It changed everything. His underling, brave soul, breaks into the meeting at this point and he goes, I'm going to tell you right now that after working with you for a decade, that was the first presentation where I ever understood what the hell you were talking about.
Wow.
It was stunning. It was stunning. Like, everybody was so quiet. Ooh. You
know? Okay.
But and this happens so many times. We have all of these stories.
This is good advice for everybody. If it's not for you, get it for your boss. Slide rules.
Or just
buy it for yourself. Buy it for your boss if they're giving you, you know.
But just try it.
Buy it for an engineer you know and love. Right?
Try it a little bit. Try it for a couple, three slides. If it's not comfortable, you're innovators, you're experimenters, you know how to do control groups versus experimental groups. Know how to innovate and try something out and then retool it, hone it, try again.
Yeah.
That's all we're asking.
Break the mold, right? Break the mold.
Absolutely.
Our time is up. Like, we've gone a little over time. I am just, it's so fun to talk with you and I could go on for longer, clearly.
I love my work. Yeah,
absolutely. Everybody get the book and the Cornell. Liz, did we share the link for the Cornell presentation?
You know, I it should be on the event page. If not, I will get it from Tracy. Her course starts in a week and a half, 2 weeks.
Something like that. Right. Yeah. Like,
just you can take it.
They just shoot me an email and say it started and then my calendar perks up. But it's a rolling enrollment. So, you know, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out. I'll get some answers for you.
Right. So, but if they're inspired to, they should sign up for the course.
Yeah. We talk about all the things we talked about today, but we talk about international work and accessibility and being online, being in rooms. And
well, you go so much deeper into things in the course. I mean, we don't have time for that now. We had time to talk about the subject line. It's just been so good to talk to you, Tracy. Really, honestly.
Tons of fun.
Yes. Thank you so much for coming. And thank you, everybody, for showing up. And we'll see you in the next Room 42.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tracy. Bye, everyone.